Right, we're holding on Hey Omid Beis by the Mishnah. Mishnah says, Torah Yolda Kamin Chamor, if a cow gives birth to something that resembles a donkey, the Chamor Yolda Kamin Surus, or a donkey gives birth to something that resembles a horse, Torah Minah Bechorah, then either way, the baby is potter from Bechorah if it happens to be a firstborn. There is a different girsa. The choice was the Rosh wants to say maybe the girsa should be v'chamor sheyolda kamin para. But anyway, the point is that it has to be that the mother and baby both resemble a chamor. Shenemar, as the pasuk says, petach chamor shnei pamim, because the Torah twice mentions the concept that a petach chamor has to be redeemed from a koyin, once in Parshas Bo, once in Kisisa. Therefore, that teaches us actually hey, a yerlet chamer, a hanerlet chamer. So the one that's giving birth, the mother, has to be a donkey, and the baby that was born also has to be a donkey. In other words, they have to not just have the DNA of a donkey, but actually look like one.
How can you look one if it's a product of two different species?
Who said anything about two different species? What we're talking about over here is parasha yolta kamin chamer means, for example, a cow gave birth to a deformed baby that resembles a donkey.
Oh, wait. Okay.
Or not, we're not talking about horse breed. For one thing, the Gemara is going to tell us later on Daf Zayin, Daf Ches, that animals, that kosher and non-kosher animals can't interbreed. So a para and a chamer wouldn't be able to have offspring together. No, what we mean is, in other words, you have a para mated with a par, but their baby, for whatever reason, is deformed and looks like a donkey. Or the same thing, a male and female donkey mate, but the baby ends up looking like a horse or looking like a cow or whatever. Okay. Next, umahim bachila. In Nidiv, as Hashem, we'll talk about cases where you have human babies are born or miscarried, usually is what it describes over there, resembling various kinds of creatures. Yeah. Okay. Umahim ba'achila. The next question is, and we're also digressing a minute from the dinim of Petra Chamor, what would be the din? Would you be allowed to eat this baby? Now Rashi says, when we say mahein, what about them? Obviously, if you have a donkey gave birth to something that looks like a horse, there's no reason to think you would be able to eat it. Neither the parent nor the baby looks like anything kosher. So Rashi says the hein means in general, when you have babies that don't resemble their parents, baby animals that don't resemble their parents, are you allowed to eat them or not? Suppose, for example, that you have, the first case of our Mishnah was, for example, a parah gives birth to something that resembles a chamur, meaning, among other things, it doesn't have split hooves. You could have the other way around. You could have, for example, a chamur gives birth, let's say, to something that resembles a parah that has split hooves. What would be the din about eating it? At the top of the next Amud says that maybe the girsa should really be mahu ba'achila. Anyway, the point is, the question is, if you have a non-kosher animal gives birth to an animal that resembles a kosher one, or vice versa, what are the genome about eating? The rule is like this. Behema tahora sheyoldikim in behema tmeha. If a tahor animal, a cow, gives birth to something that resembles a tame animal, for example, a donkey, mutar ba'achila, you're allowed to eat it. It doesn't have the simonim, doesn't matter. It was born from a kosher mother, therefore it's kosher. Whereas a tame animal that gives birth to something that resembles a tahor animal, so for example, a female donkey gives birth to something that has split hooves and resembles a cow, also ba'achila, that's also to eat, because the general rule is shayotim in a tame, ba'yotim in a tahor. Whatever comes out of a tame species is itself tame. Whatever comes out of a tahor species is itself tahor.
And what about the requirement that it has to be active? Money.
Okay, so we're going to see in the Gemara why it is that this din works. But it is interesting, since you mentioned it, there is a chakira among the Achronim, I think it begins with the Maharit, a famous chakira, when the Torah tells us that animals that kosher animals chew their cud and have split hooves are those a simon, that, in other words, intrinsically these animals are kosher, and therefore Hashem provided them with physical characteristics for us to know whether they're kosher, or are they the siba? Is it the cause, only because this creature has split hooves and chews its cud, is it kosher and it doesn't have it? Then, sort of, yeah. So if you say that it's a result, that intrinsically they're kosher, and Hashem gave them their simonim, okay, so this one Hashem didn't give it the simonim, nevertheless, it's still kosher. If you say, and for example, the Rogachover says that they're actually a siva, okay, so you would have to say that you're nevertheless, though, since again, we're going to have psukim in the Gemara that show us that it's kosher, then in this case, it's allowed. Yeah. Okay. Okay, so the Gemara is still kosher. First of all, let's deal first with the first half of the Mishnah, which is, we said that if a donkey gives birth, that if a cow gives birth to something that resembles a donkey, or a donkey gives birth to something that resembles a horse, then it's potter from Bechora. So we have to deal with the ins and outs of that din, and where we get it from. So Tnanha, so we learn in a Mishnah in the next letter, Rochel Yolda Min Eiz. Here in our Mishnah, we're talking about involving a donkey, because we're in the parak that's talking about Petach Hamar. In the next parak, we start talking about Bechor Behemah Tahara. So it mentions over there, if a female sheep, a ewe, gives birth to something that resembles a goat, the Eiz Sheyolda Min Rochel, or a female goat gives birth to something that resembles a sheep, Potter Min HaBechorah, so again, it's Potter from Bechorah. However, Vim Yeshba Mikta Simonin, however, if it has some of the Simonim of its mother, in other words, if it partially resembles the species that it's supposed to belong to, for example, Tosfos says over there later, it means, for example, let's say its forelegs or its hind legs are the shape of the species it's supposed to be, the wool of it, let's say, resembles, whatever it is, so it looks partially, looks like a hybrid, sort of, it looks like, it's not an actual hybrid, but it looks like one, let's say, then it's Chayev and Bechor. We learned the other day, Rabbi Yochanan informed us that it still is considered a mum, and therefore you'd be able, the Kohen would be able to shecht it and eat it. You wouldn't bring it as a carbon.
It's a contradiction?
No, it's not a contradiction, but the question is, about this mikta simonim, first of all, menohani mili, where do we know this from? First, we're going to ask where we know the basic din, that if a creature gives birth to something that resembles a different species, that completely resembles a different species, for example, a sheep giving birth to something that resembles a goat, that should be potter from bechor. Where are we getting that from?
If we say that tihara, everything that comes from tihara is...
No, forget, we're not talking yet about the question whether you can eat it or not. The question is whether it's chayev and bechor. If a female sheep gives birth to... No, not at all. If a female sheep gives birth to its first baby, and it happens to be a male, and that male, though, completely resembles a different species, it looks like a goat. So we're saying it's potter from Bechorah. But if it has mixed simonim, if it partially resembles a goat, partly resembles a sheep, then it'll be chayev in Bechorah. So menohani mili, where do we know that from? Now, the Gemara is going to ask soon, what do you mean, where do we know it from? We have a limud for it in our Mishnah, from the word Petra Chamer. But first, let's see what the Gemara says. Menohani mili, Amar of Yehoda, like this, the Amar Kro, because you have a pasuk regarding Bechor Behemah Tahara, you have a pasuk in Parshas Korach that says like this. Ach b'chor, the whole pasuk goes like this. Ach b'chor shur or b'chor kesev or b'chor eiv. However, the b'chor of an ox or the b'chor of a sheep or the b'chor of a goat, a lo sifte, you can't redeem them. Kodeshen, they're kodesh, and you have to bring them as a korban, etc. So, ach b'chor shur. So the word b'chor shur teaches us shehei hu shur or b'chor shur. The parent has to be a shur, has to be cattle, has to be an ox, and the baby also has to be a shur. B'chor kesev, same thing. Shiyehi hu kesev, b'chor kesev. B'chor eiz, shiyehi hu eiz, b'chor eiz. The fact that it repeats b'chor by each one of the three species means that the parent and child have to resemble each other. They both have to look like they belong to the same species. Yochel afilu yeshve mitzvah simonim. Then you would think, well, in that case, it should be potter, even if it only partially looks like another species, as long as it...
It should look completely like...
That's the question. B'chor shur and b'chor kesed and b'chor eiz teaches us, for example, that if a shur, a female shur, that is, were to give birth to a creature that looks completely like a kesed, then it would be potter. How do we know that if it looks partially like a kesed and partly like a shur, that it should be chayev? Talmud Lama, ach cholach. Therefore, the pasuk starts off by saying, ach. And ach means to separate, to divide, meaning, in other words, that within ach and rach in general in Torah are coming to be mamayit. So over here, what it means is mamayit. Only if it completely doesn't resemble the mother, then it's potter from bechor. But if it partially resembles and partially not, then it would be chayim.
What would mean just this ach, let's say, the pshat of this ach, what is it for even?
No, the simple meaning of it is however, because the previous pasuk mentions something else. I think the previous pasuk mentions Petach Hamar, I don't remember, but whatever it is, okay, so you have this word ach, but whenever you have the word ach, it's meant for a drasha, so over here we're using it to darshan that even if the animal is not completely resembling a shur, but it only partially resembles a shur, that's enough for it to be chayav and b'chor, for it to have traditional b'chor. Okay.
From the word ach.
Okay. So the question
what's
is...
What's the logic?
The logic is that...
What's the logic?
If it completely doesn't resemble the parent, then it's potter. If it partially resembles the parent, it's potter.
When we interpret...
I don't know. What do you...
Potter.
Okay. Ach means that we're reducing the scope of Bechor Shur, Bechor Kesev, and Bechor Eitz. So we're reducing the scope of it, only if it is completely unlike a Shur, completely unlike a Kesev, completely unlike an Eitz as a potter. But if it's partially like them, then it's fine. Okay, so the question is, why do we need a different Joshua for that? Well, Tana Keter Keter Konosu Walapara. Our Tana uses the word uses the two time that it says Keter Chamer, and one of them our Mishnah had mentioned was the case where Parah gave birth to something that resembled a Chamer. So once, in other words, the Tana of our Mishnah takes the view that once it says Keter Chamer, then it means not only as far as a Chamer, but as far as every other species that has the genome of Bechorah, that it will be Potter if the baby doesn't at all resemble the mother, if it resembles a different species. So why does Rabbi Yehuda need to be giving us a different Joshua from Bechor Shor, Bechor Keter, Bechor Eitz? Now, Tosfos points out, okay, you could argue the difference is a Keter Chamer only has Kedushas Domim, and because all you have to do is redeem it with a sheep for the Kohen, whereas the case of the next Seret, Rachel Sheyolda Min Eitz has Kedushas Aguf. Okay, but nevertheless, we can still say that you learn one from the other. Okay, so the question is, why does Rabbi Yehuda have to give us a different Joshua? The answer is, again, the Tana had told us, the Tana of our Mishnah had told us, Petra Chamer, Shnei Pamim. Rabbi Yehuda is telling us from Ach Bechor Shor, Bechor Kesev, Bechor Eitz. Why do we need a different one? The answer is, Huda Amar Rabbi Yehuda Agviri. Because Rabbi Yehuda is following the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda Agviri. Rabbi Yehuda Agviri is also a Tana, so he's able to argue with our Mishnah. Rabbi Yehuda is following his opinion. Rabbi Yehuda, who is an Amorah, is following Rabbi Yehuda Agviri's opinion. Kitanya, as we learn in Brayso, Rabbi Yehuda Agviri, Ach Bechor, exactly what we just said, Ach Bechor Shur, Ajay, who Shur, Bechor Shur. The word Bechor Shur means that the mother has to be a Shur and the baby has to be a Shur. Bechor Kesev, Ajay, who Kesev, Bechor Kesev. Or Bechor Eiz, Ajay, who Eiz, Bechor Eiz. Yochol, Achilu Yeshua, Mikta Simonim. Then you would think, even if it's not completely dissimilar, it's only partially dissimilar, it should be called the Talmud Lema Ach Bechor. So the same exact thing that Rabbi Yehuda told us. All right, the question then becomes, what is the argument between the Tana of our Mishnah and Rabbi Yehuda Agviri? They seem to both be coming up with the same halacha, so same conclusion, one, yeah, in different ways, so what's the nafkamina in between them? Tana didan sovar. So what it is like this. The Tana of our Mishnah holds, Gali Rachmona b'kedushas domim. The Torah informs us of this concept that if the baby doesn't look, that if the baby completely looks like a different species, that you have that concept like kedushas domim, v'hu adin b'kedushas aguf, and you're meant to understand that the same thing should apply regarding b'chor behemah tahora, which has kedushas aguf. Therefore, the Tana of our Mishnah says, once you have petra chamor shnei pamim, you know therefore that it applies to the gene of chamor as far as pidyon petra chamor. Therefore, you would also know from that, you would also be able to derive from that, that it applies to b'chor behemah tahora, which has kedushas aguf. That if it doesn't have kedushas domim, when the mother is a donkey and the baby does not look like a donkey, that it should be potter from Pechorah and not Akdushas Domim, you can learn from that also the same thing when it comes to a sheep versus a goat, where had it resembled the mother, it would have had Akdushas Agof. Rabbi Yossi Sava, whereas Rabbi Yossi learns the other way around, Galil Rahman, Akdushas Agof. Vuhu Adin, Akdushas Domim. Rabbi Yossi says it's the other way around. The Torah tells us by the kosher animals, which are Akdushas Agof, you're meant to learn from that that it applies to Akdushas Domim as well. Vigoma, Akdushas Domim, Akdushas Agof. So he learns Akdushas Domim from Kedushas Aguf. In other words, he gets at it the opposite way as the Tanakhama. The Tanakhama takes it from Kedushas Domim and then applies it to Kedushas Aguf. And Rabbi Yossi says the other way around. So Rabbi Negoshim points out, it's not just which one they're deriving from, it's also what mechanism are they using to derive. According to the Tana of our Mishnah, who's learning it from Kedushas Domim, it means you can learn Kedushas Aguf from it by a Kal Vachomer. If even the baby doesn't have Kedushas Domim, if even in a situation where we're only dealing with Kedushas Domim, namely the donkey, it still doesn't have Kedushas, how much more so when we're talking about having Kedushas Aguf. So he would learn it from a Kal Vachomer. Rabbi Yehuda Agviri, who learns it the other way around, would say you can't learn it by Kal Vachomer, obviously. So he learns it by a Mamot Sivu. He learns it by a Binyan Av. Once the Torah tells us in one case, then it applies to the other case also. Okay, but nevertheless, it's a valid way of learning. Okay. Fine. No, that's what it is. So that's because he can move. Once the Torah tells us about Kedushas Damim, the Gomer, Kedushas Damim, the Kedushas Aguf. So he says, we're learning by a Mamatzinu from Kedushas Aguf to Kedushas Damim. Once we see the Torah tells us Kedushas Aguf that it doesn't have, if it doesn't resemble the mother, then the same thing is also true about Kedushas Damim, namely by Damim.
By which logic?
By the logic of Mamatzinu, by the logic of once the Torah tells us in one place, we apply it to other similar cases. That's Mamatzinu, that's Binyanah. Fine. So that's how they're learning it respectively. So now the question is, the Tana Yidan Hai Bechur my other way. Okay, so the Tana of our Mishnah, what is he doing with her Vyakagiri's Pasuk of Ach Bechur Shura Bechur Kesev? The answer is Miboyla the Rabbi Yosef of Chanina. The Tana of our Mishnah would use it to teach us what Rabbi Yosef of Chanina says. The Amr Rabbi Yosef of Chanina, Lama Nemru Emurin B'chor Shur Emurin B'chor Kesev Emurin B'chor Ev. Now, in that pasuk that we quoted before, beginning Ach B'chor Shur B'chor Kesev, the pasuk continues, Es Domam Tizrik Al HaMizbeach, you have to sprinkle their blood on the Mizbeach, Es Chelbom Takter, and their fat you have to burn on the Mizbeach, you share the Reach HaFarach HaShem. So in effect, it's like the Torah is mentioning individually by each one of these three species that you have to burn the Chelev on the Mizbeach. Now, why should the Torah have to do that? We know in general, Korbanos, the fat is burned on the Mizbeach. Yeah, so the Torah should have just had to say, that you bring them as a Korban, that's that. Why does it mention the Emurim individually by each one? So Rabbi Yisrael Chanina says, Tricha. To eat cause of Rachmanah B'chor, sure. If the Torah had only written it regarding the B'chor of an ox, you would say, you know why the Torah is telling you to burn the Emurim on the Mizbeach? Because you have another Chumrah in a Shur in general. Shekhen Yisrabim in a Sachim. A Shur in general, now we're not talking about a Bechor specifically. A Bechor doesn't have a Sachim. But in general, when you bring an ox as a carbon, for example, an Oil or a Shlomim or what have you, you bring a Sachim with it, and you have a larger amount of Nisachim for a Shur than you do for any other species. You have, as we learned back in Zachim and in Menachos. You have half a hin of wine, half a hin of oil, and then 3 asurim of flour for an ox, and then and lesser amounts for a ram or for a sheep. So therefore, if it only mentioned it by shur, you would say, okay, shur, you have more nesachim, therefore the turtle also wants you to be burning the emurim on the mizbeach, but not necessarily by the other species. Kesev, if it only mentioned it by kesev, you would say, shekhen nesurah ba'alya. You would say, yeah, but a kesev has a sheep. Has an advantage over the other two species, namely that you have to burn the tail on the fat tail on the mizbeach, which you don't have by a sheep, and you don't have by a goat, and you don't have by an ox. The A's, and if it only mentioned it by a goat, you would say a goat has a unique feature that the other two don't have. Shekhen nisraba eifalavet eschavim, because you find when a person is oivadavet zara b'shoizig, the korban they have to bring is zavka a goat. For a person who does, they have to bring a goat as a korban, as opposed to any other case where they have to bring a chatas, it's either a sheep or a goat. So you would argue a goat has something unique about it that the other ones don't have. And to continue, because when an individual worships Avodah Zarah b'shoigig, then they have to bring a goat specifically for a chatas. Okay, so far, Rabbi Yosef of Chanina is saying, therefore, the Torah couldn't have mentioned only one of these species, and we would deduce the other ones from them. So, let's continue. Chodem et chodem le'as, yeah? We see we can't learn any one of the individual species from the other. Kesei chodem itaki, shur kesei le'as, because each one has a unique feature. Kesei chodem itaki, should we argue that we should be, maybe the Torah should have only written two of them, and we would have derived the third one from it, using a mamatzinu. But using Tzadashava, the problem with that is Behevoi Lichter. Which one should not have been written? And this is similar to what we had in Cholin, where when you're trying to learn from a Tzadashava from two things, then it's very easy to slog it up. So, Loi Lichter Rahmana Beshur. There we were talking about regarding Basa Bacholov, I think it was. Behevoi Lichter. Which one are you telling me the Torah wouldn't have had to write it by and we could have derived it from the other? Should we say the Torah didn't have to write the word b'chor by a shur, that is? It could have said ach shur or b'chor kesev or b'chor is. The taste in Hanach, and you would derive it from the other ones. You would derive the shur from the other ones that you have to bring the emurim on the mizbeach. Can't. Mala Hanach shekhen yitzirabu eitzopsochim. A sheep and a goat have a ribui that you can bring them for a carbon pesach. An ox, you can't.
A sheep?
Yeah, you can bring a sheep or a goat. Yeah, a goat you can also bring for your carbon pesach. So Sertomimus aquosimus is Dicotria.
Can we see that in Latin?
Yeah, I'm sure we mentioned it in Latin, but yeah, them is a fact. So in case I can be a sheep or a goat. Logos the bekes of the taste man. Should we say it didn't have to write it by the sheep, the word b'chor, and we would have learned it from the other ones? Can't. Malahanach shekin nisrabu ekel avodas kachavim b'tzibur. The other two have the unique feature that if the tzibur worshipped of the desert of the shogiv, then they have to bring a power and a sorrow, whereas they don't bring a kevus. So the power and the sorrow have a certain advantage over the kevus. Loyalist Rahman of
the A's.
One is a Khantis, one is a Zarbatsibur. Loyalist Rahman of the A's the case Ma'anach. Should we say the Torah didn't have to write it by the goat and we could have learned it from the other ones? Can't. Malahanach Shakane Bet Yesh Behan Sad Ribuye Samazeach. The sheep and the ox have an advantage between the two of them that each one of them has something extra that's offered on the Zeach. In the case of the ox, the fact that you have a larger amount of stuffing. In the case of the sheep, the fact that you have a fat tail. True, they're not the same thing, but big deal. When we're doing a tzadah shavu between two things, a pircha kol dehu is enough. A goat has neither of those. It doesn't have a greater amount of stuffing, and it doesn't have a fat tail.
So you can't.
So therefore, elalav. So therefore, Rabbi Yosef Chanina says, therefore, the Torah had to write the word b'chor by all three, and then tell us that the chelav is brought on the mizbeach, because otherwise you couldn't have derived one from any of the other two, even two, or one from any of the other two, or two from any of the one. So therefore, the Chachamim would say, that's why it says b'chor shor, b'chor keseh, b'chor eh. Not like Rabbi Yosef Agrivi is saying that that's where we learn from, that if the mother and baby don't resemble each other, then it's potter from b'chor. So therefore, they need to learn it from petrach hamor, petrach hamor.
He learned it from
b'chor keseh, b'chor shor, b'chor keseh, b'chor eh. The Chachamim are answering, we use b'chor shor, b'chor keseh, b'chor eh to teach us what Rabbi Yosef ben Chanina told us. That if you didn't have those words, you wouldn't know that you have to bring the name of all three of them on the mizbeach. By the way, it's probably good in the rest of the sugya, whenever we talk about it, in order to save some words, whenever we talk about this case where the baby and the mother don't resemble each other, the term that the Gemara uses for it is nidma. Because the nidma means it resembles. Nidma means it resembles. So this is a baby that resembles some other species. So again, the Chachamim are learning that the nidma is potter from petrach hamor, petrach hamor. And Rabbi Yosef Agrivi is learning it from b'chor shor, b'chor keseh, b'chor eiz. But the Chachamim are saying we need b'chor shor, b'chor keseh, b'chor eiz to teach us that the emurim are offered on the mizbeach of all three species. But when they're b'chor, therefore I don't have it available to teach us anything about nidmeh. Therefore I have to learn nidmeh from a different source. Okay. There, Rabbi Yosef Agrivi, what would Rabbi Yosef Agrivi answer to that? He would say, "Ken l'tzav rachmana ach b'chor shor keseh ve'eiz." Fine, but then the Torah didn't have to mention the word fine. That explains why the Torah had to mention the three species. But it doesn't explain why it had to say the word b'chor individually by each one. It could just said, ach b'chor shor keseh ve'eiz. B'chor, b'chor lomali. Why would I have to repeat the word b'chor by each one? Shma'el olav, shma'mino achi yehu shor b'chor yeshor. Therefore, it teaches us that the baby cannot be a nidme. It has to be the mother is an ox and the baby is an the mother is a cow, whatever, and the baby is an ox. And the same thing with the other species.
The big
we know that they have to be resembled. The Chachamim also agree, but they learn that from Petrach Hamor, Petrach Hamor. So he's saying, you Chachamim are saying you need the word B'chor Shor, B'chor Keseh, B'chor Eiz to teach us about the Emorim. I agree we need to learn about the Emorim, but all we need for that is the word Shor, Keseh, and Eiz. We don't need B'chor Shor, B'chor Keseh, B'chor Eiz. So that teaches us that it can't be Nidna. Okay. Fine. So that takes care of that. That's what the Chachamim do with Rabbi Yosef Agrivi's pasuk of b'chor shor, b'chor keseh, b'chor eiz, and that's what Rabbi Yosef Agrivi answers. Fine. Now the other way around, Rabbi Yosef Agrivi, I petrach hamor, petrach hamor, my chavin. What is Rabbi Yosef Agrivi doing with the pasuk with the twice that it says petrach hamor? The answer is mebari lo v'chibtanya. He uses it for the following drasha that it says in a b'raita. Also, Rabbi Yosef Agrivi, I mean, this is Rabbi Yosef Agrivi himself saying, mitoch shenema ach podes sifte es b'chor adam. Now the pasuk says, however, you have to redeem the b'chor of human beings, pity not ben, that's b'chor abehem asmei atikta, and you have to redeem from the koyin the b'chor of non-kosher animals. Now what non-kosher animals? Shemayani after the pitri tosim ugmalim. Wouldn't that also imply that you have to do not just pidyon petra chamor, but also pidyon petra sus and pidyon petra gomel, whatever kind of non-kosher livestock that you have? Yeah. Talmud Bar, Petra Hamer. Therefore, the Torah mentions Petra Hamer, meaning Pet the first time, meaning Petra Hamer Amar Tilacha. So I only am saying about Petra Hamer, but like Pitcher Sosa Magmalim, so not horses and not camels. However, that's not enough. Bad dying on your armor. Still, though, you could argue that maybe what the Torah means is pitre chamor b'seh. Only when it comes to a petre chamor do you have the din that you can redeem it with a sheep. Even if the sheep is worth far less than the petre chamor. Pitre susum gmalim choldover. Maybe, though, you could argue that a petre sus or petre gomel is chayev in b'chora, but you have to redeem, but you can redeem it with something else. So on the surface, Rashi uses the expression that petre chamor would be with a seh and nothing else, whereas the other behemoth may could be with anything else, or it could be with anything else. It's still the bottom of hay and bay, actually. So Rashi, the last Rashi on the Omer, uses the expression that petre chamor maybe is with a seh, v'loy b'dover acher, not with anything else, whereas other behemoth may could be with anything else. Now, the fact is, we're going to learn later on in our perek, you are able to be poda petre chamor with anything you want, provided that it's worth at least as much as a petre chamor. The chiddush of a seh is you can be poda with it even if it's worth far less than the petre chamor. So therefore, Mephoshim explained that what Rashi may mean is a petre, if we only had one time that the Torah said petre chamor, you would think, okay, so a petre chamor, you have the kula that you can redeem it with a seh if you want, but if not, then you have to redeem it with its full value. Other animals, let's say they're the horse or the camel or whatever, even with other things, you could redeem them with anything, even if it's worth less than the value of it. So how do we know that not? How do we know you don't have to redeem it at all? Tamabayim, petra chamer, shnei palmim, therefore, Rabbi Yitzhak Lili says, that's why the Torah again repeats the word petra chamer for a second time, meaning pitre chamer mamar tilacha, v'lo pitre susim ugmalim. So I'm only telling you that you have to redeem the petra chamer, but not the petra of horses or camels. So Rabbi Yitzhak Lili says, that's what we're using petra chamer twice for, to teach us that the concept of pidyon does not apply to any other species. So I don't have it available for your drasha chachamim to teach us that it excludes the nidveh. Therefore, I have to learn the nidveh from b'chor shor, b'chor tes, and b'chor
reis. The repeats of pidyon from our twice would apply to other species. No. Why exclude them both?
No, because we're saying, since it mentions twice petra chamer, then therefore it means the first time teaches us that only chamer. So the first time teaches us that only the chamer is redeemed with a seh, and the second one teaches us that only the chamer is redeemed at all. The other one's then redeemed. That's what it is. It's repeating. Okay. Fine. The question on that is, Parech Rav Achoy. However, Rav Achoy points out a problem with that. And then in a few places, Tosfos mentions, and other Mefarshim also discuss the idea, this Rav Achoy may have been one of the Udi Rabbanan Sivurai. And therefore, the expression he uses in the Gemara, it very often is like this unusual expression, Parech, like he's trying to refute the whole thing. Parech literally means to break apart. Because he's Rabban the Rabbanan Sivurai, and his job is to clarify things that are still outstanding in the Gemara, things that weren't resolved. This is the Rabbanan Sivurai, the generation or two, the couple of generations immediately after the Amorai. So, he asks like this. Okay, according to Rabbi Yitzhak Lili, we're saying that you have twice petra chamor, and you're saying the first one teaches us that only a petra chamor is redeemed with a seh, and the second one teaches us they're not being redeemed, that they don't need to be redeemed at all. But, so what does that mean? After all, you do need both of them. You need both of them, because if you only had one, the ikos of chad, have amina, then you would think that you have to darshan it using the rule, when you have something that was part of a general rule, and it was brought out, and it was excluded from that general rule, the lamid, to teach us a new din. Like in this case, you have the pasuk mentioned, b'chora behemat meya, which on the face of it includes all non-kosher species. Then the pasuk singles out the chamor and tells us that you have to redeem it with a seh. So he would use the rule, loy lamed al atme yotzer, one of the 13 midas shatron adreshes then. Now it doesn't come to teach us about itself. El lamed al klal kula yotzer, it comes to teach us about the entire group. So if you only had one time, if you would say that not only the petra chamor, but also the sus and also the gomel have to be redeemed, all the non, in other words, again, when the Torah tells us, and then in one place it tells us that petra chamor tifta the seh, you would say, okay, the Torah is mentioning the chamor among the non-kosher animals, and now we generalize from that to all the non-kosher animals. Therefore, you could argue, he would say, okay, then the Torah mentions the second time petra chamor, which teaches us pitre chamor and vle pitre susim ugmalim, but fine, you're telling me that it's exclusive, it means only donkeys, not horses and camels. However, you could argue still that Ema Ma'atinu Miseh, that second time is only Mimayat that you don't have to redeem them with a seh, or the Olam B'chol Davar, but maybe after all you do have to redeem them with, maybe you can redeem them with anything else. we were assuming up until this time that the first time that we were assuming it's a given that non that other if there, we were assuming before we start with the assumption that other non-kosher animals are excluded by the first tetra chamer, and then the second one excludes that the first one excludes them from having to be redeemed with seb, the second one excludes them altogether. But we should argue maybe the first tetra chamer just the opposite, maybe it includes all of them, and then the second one only excludes them partially, that they don't need a seb but they need something. The answer is in kain lichtav rachmana tetra chamer tiftev aser v'chamer tiftev aser. Fine, but in that case, the Torah could have mentioned in one place it could have used the word tetra chamer, fine, but in another place, when it repeats this din, when it repeats this mitzvah, that tetra chamer has to be redeemed with a donkey, it didn't have to use the word tetra again, could have just said chamer tiftev aser. And we would understand we're talking about a tetra chamer. Then it would mean what you're saying, that tetra chamer tiftev aser would teach us then it would be lo lamed al asma yaseh lamed al kar klo yaseh. So horses and camels need it also. Then the second one, chamer tiftev aser, would be okay, but only a chamer requires a aser. The other ones you can be poured with anything. The fact that it repeats again tetra chamer, the fact that it repeats again tetra chamer tiftev aser lamali, that teaches us, as we said, pitcher chamer no mamar telecha, v'le pitcher is susam agmalim. Then it means only exclusively. It's exclusively pitcher chamerim and pitcher agmalim. That's exclusively pitcher chamerim, not pitcher susam and not pitcher agmalim. So that's what it is, because it says twice explicitly the words pitcher chamer. And so therefore it excludes all the other ones. Right. Fine. So that's Rabbi Yitzchak. Really, that's what he's saying. You learn from the twice tetra chamer, which is in our Mishnah. Therefore, he says that if we're going to exclude the nidmeh, we can't exclude it on the basis of that, because I need tetra chamer to teach us that susim and gemalim don't require pidyon. Therefore, to exclude the nidmeh, I need b'chor shor, b'chor tetra, b'chor. Now, v'rabban, v'tana didan lama uchi susim u'gemalim in alei. Okay. The Tana of our Mishnah has to also agree that you don't have to redeem firstborn horses or firstborn camels. Where is he getting that from? If he's using Petra Hamer to exclude the Nidmeh, then where is he learning that from? The answer is Amar Papa, like this. Kol Miknecha Tizah, because you have the Pasuk that mentions Petra Hamer, you have the Pasuk before it goes like this. Kol Petra Rechem Li, or Petra Rechem is mine, V'chol Miknecha Tizachar, any of your cattle, any of your animals that give birth to a male, Petra Shor V'seh, or Petra, the firstborn of an ox or a seh, or Petra Chamer Tifteh V'seh, and the firstborn of a donkey you have to redeem with a seh, the Moistik Tivarachte, V'chol B'chor Adam M'manecha Tifteh. So they learn it using a klal of practice. Kol Mishnah Kati Zachar klal, when it says all of your cattle that give birth to males, not cattle, all of your animals that give birth to males are chayev and b'chor. That would be klal. Shur v'seh v'chamur prat. Then the end of that pasuk, which mentions petra shur v'seh, and the beginning of the following pasuk, which mentions petra chamur, that constitutes a prat. Therefore, we use a different rule. Klal of prat, ein b'chlal ala mashu b'prat. So when you have a klal of prat, it means the Torah is limiting the klal only to the prat. Therefore, it only applies to those three types of creatures, midyachar and aloi. It doesn't apply to any others. So that's where we know that it only applies to junkies among the non-poshers. That's the point of the chachamim.
And they don't use this.
So therefore, they don't need petra chamer for that. Therefore, they can use petra chamer about the nidmeh. Rabbi Yitzchak Levi, what would he answer? He would answer Petr Hifsika in. Sure, but the Pasuk, how does the Pasuk go? Kol Petr Rechem Levi Chol Mishnah Chatizach or Petr Shor Vaseh, or Fetr Chamer Tifteh Vaseh. So he says the fact that it repeats the word Petr in the case of the Chamer breaks things up. In other words, it could have said Petr Shor Vaseh, but Chamer Tifteh Vaseh, like we said before. So therefore, the fact that it says Petr breaks things up. Therefore, it's not a follow prompt anymore. Because after all, the previous pasuk is already mentioning firstborns, Petter, so it didn't have to repeat the word Petter over here. So therefore, it means it's coming to break it up, and that you don't have a qualifier. Okay, but Rabbanan, what are the Rabbanan answer to that? They say, sure, the word Petter wasn't necessary, but Vav Hadar Avei Kwa. But the pasuk doesn't just say Petter Chamor, it says Uf Petter Chamor. So that joins it back together. So you're back to a qualifier. There, Rabbi Yisrael Gvili, whereas Rabbi Yisrael Gvili would answer to that. You would say, okay, listen, so what are you telling me? You have the wood tether to break it up, and then you have the bob to put it back together. You don't need either one. Low bob or low tether. The Torah doesn't have to write the letter bob or the tether. It could have just said, peter shervaseh, hamur kif deveseh. And then you're fine. You would say you have a kal v'chomer. You're telling me that you're breaking it up, or you're breaking up the trap with tether, and then you're joining it back together with the bob. You didn't need that. So therefore the fact that the Torah did it means meant to interrupt it.
The Chachamim do answer.
But Rabbanan, they would say, Ivy, the whole Kedushas Dom and the whole Kedushas Aguf. They would say, okay, but since there is after all a difference between a Shervaseh on the one hand and a Chamur on the other hand, namely the Shervaseh have Kedushas Aguf, because you have to bring them as a carbon. The Chamur doesn't have Kedushas Aguf, it only has Kedushas Dom, because you have to give the sheet to the carbon. Therefore, since there are two different levels of kedusha, therefore the Torah wanted to break them up by putting the word peter in there, v'hadar ariv lahu. But then, in order to make it be used as a call of time, the Torah put back in the bob. Okay. So therefore, the Chachamim say you can still work it as a call of time, whereas the Yitzchak really disagrees. He says because you have the word peter in there, therefore it breaks it up. He doesn't consider the fact that the bog was added back in there to be significant. Therefore, according to him, you don't have a klal prat, and therefore you necessarily have to learn it from peter chamer. The fact that horses and camels are partitioned. Right. Okay. Fine. Okay, so that takes care of the Chachamim versus Rabbi Yehuda Agumi's opinion, and that takes care of why at the beginning of the Sugya, Rabbi Yehuda brought the limud from B'chor Shor, B'chor Kes, and B'chor Ev, because he holds like Rabbi Yehuda Agumi. His Rebbe was Rav. That's whatever. The point is, he's entitled to pick and choose among opinions of Tanoim, and in this case, he's an Amora, but an Amora can pick among Tanoim's opinions. Okay, fine. So now we have a question as follows. So far, what we've been saying is, so far, let's refer back. Our Mishnah had mentioned that if you have a Nidme, it's kosher from Bechora, and it didn't mention anything about Mitzvah Stimon.
Nidme, again,
is an animal that looks like a different species. Our Mishnah had mentioned that a Nidme is kosher. It didn't distinguish between whether it's partial or you complete or complete. The Mishnah in the next parak, when it talks within kosher animals, mentions the partial versus complete resemblance. Yesh v'mitzvah simonim, then it's chayim. Our Mishnah didn't mention that concept. So we have a question. Parashi yolda min chamer, suppose that a cow gives birth to something that resembles a donkey, but the yesh v'mitzvah simonim, but it has some simonim of a cow, mahu, what would be the din? Again, because our Mishnah didn't mention that, didn't mention about the mitzvah simonim. On the other hand, the Mishnah in the next parak, when it mentions the sheep that gives birth to something that looks like a goat of potter, but if it has mitzvah simonim, then it's chayev. So we could consider like this. In the next parak, when we talk about a goat gave birth to something that looks like a sheep, or a sheep gave birth to something that looks like a goat, you would say, you would say, you know why, if that nidmeh has some simonim of its parent, then it should be chayev and b'chora. It's considered a mum, but it still has kedushas b'chora. Fine, you would say, b'ha tahora. Because after all, both sheep and goats are both kosher animals, and ha kedushas aguf, b'ha kedushas aguf. And both of them have equal kedushas aguf. Had the baby from a sheep looked exactly like a sheep, then for sure it would be chayev and b'chora. Had the baby from a goat looked exactly like a goat, for sure it would be chayev and b'chora. So you could argue, therefore, if you have this baby that looks partially like a sheep and partially like a goat, fine, you could argue it's chayev and b'chora, because even if it had been 100%, even if it had looked 100% like a sheep or 100% like a goat, either way it would have been chayev. In the same, not only in b'chora. Okay, the point is, though, that it has a goof that looks partially like one and partially like the other. So you could say that's reason enough to give it kedushas b'chora, because not only both species have b'chora applied to them, but both of them have the same degree of b'chora applied to them. Both of them have kedushas aguf. But over here you could argue, you're talking about a cow that gave birth to something that looks like a donkey. where the baby therefore looks like a non-kosher animal, the mother looks like a kosher animal, and there's a difference in levels of kedusha. Ha kedusha the guf, ha kedusha zamim. If it had looked like a cow, it would have had kedusha zamim. Like this, if it was born to a donkey mother, it would only have kedusha the guf. So therefore, loy, maybe now it doesn't have any kedusha at all, even if it has mixed up simonim, as long as mostly it looks like a donkey. Or maybe not. Given the fact is both cattle and donkeys have the din of bechora on different levels. Fine, one kedusha the guf, one kedusha damim, but they still both have kedusha bechora. So maybe kodesh. Maybe therefore it should have kedusha. If it's only partially nidma, if it's mostly like the one but still somewhat resembles its mother. The im kimtaloimar. Now, if you're going to say, given the idi v'idi mikdash v'bechorah kodesh, you could argue that yes, it would be kodesh because both cattle and donkeys have the concept of bechorah. But fine, if you're going to say like that, then ask another question. Chamor sheyolda min sus mahu. What happens if a donkey gives birth to an animal that resembles a horse? What would be the gene? Horses don't have kedushas b'chayra, as we just established before. So therefore, ha'chavadeh le'bach mikdash b'chayrahu, on the one hand, you could argue a horse is not a species that has kedushas b'chayra at all. Therefore, maybe it should be potter, even if it only partially resembles a horse. Ojoma kivin de min t'meyahu kodesh. Or maybe you could argue, okay, but it is a behemoth t'meyah after all, and it is a behemoth t'meyah, so therefore That's the second question. If we assume that in the previous case it would be kodesh when you have a mother cow and a baby that looks like a donkey, then what about when you have a mother donkey and a baby that looks like a horse? You could argue that maybe a horse doesn't have kedushas b'chayra, but on the other hand, they are both behemoth tmeis, so maybe therefore they would have the din of kedushas b'chayra because they're the mother and the baby do have that at least in common. They both look like tamei animals. And if you're going to answer that yes, because a horse and a donkey are both non-kosher animals, therefore it means they have that commonality, and therefore the baby would be chayav b'chayra because of that. How about a third possibility? Parasha yolda min sus mahu. What happens if the mother is a cow and the baby looks like a horse? Now, over here, they seem to be completely dissimilar. One of them is a tahor species. The other one resembles a tamei species. And a cow is subject to kedushas b'chayra. A horse is not. So therefore, they're so completely dissimilar. Therefore, even if it has mitzvah simonim, even if it somewhat, in some ways, resembles a cow, it should be potter. Or maybe the fact that it has mixed simonim, the fact that in some ways it does resemble its mother, is enough to give it kedushas b'chayra. So what would be the din?
So either it's the simonim that count, basically.
So in the first
the origin.
Well, that's the question, basically, in the third case, particularly. Yeah. Okay, so Toshma, we learn in a Braisa. Behema tahora sheyolda min behema tmeya. If a tahor animal gives birth to some to a nidme that looks like a behema tmeya, p'tura min abechora, so it's potter from bechora. Im yesh ben mitzvah simonim chayavas bechora. But if it has some simonim of the mother, then it's chayav in bechora. My lav after the tahora sheyolda min sus. Now the fact that the braisa just mentions generically behema tahora that gives birth to something resembling a behema tmeya without specifying what kind of tahora and what kind of tmeya, shouldn't that mean even if the mother is a para and it gives birth to a baby that looks like a horse, which therefore that would answer the question. The answer is loy parashiyolam in chamor. No, you could say the braisa when it mentions that it gave birth to something that resembles a behemoth tmeya, it doesn't mean all behemoth tmeya. It means specifically the one behemoth tmeya that has the genome of bechora, namely a donkey. So no proof from that. Okay. Toshma parashiyolam min chamor. Let's look at our mishnah. Rather, not our Mishnah, but it's a Braisa again. Parash Yolda Mincha, similar to our Mishnah. Parash Yolda Mincha Mer, if a cow gives birth to something that resembles a donkey, the Chamer Shiyolda Minsus, or a donkey gives birth to something that resembles a horse, Turam in a Bechorda, so either way it's Potter from Bechorda, but the Braisa adds, which our Mishnah didn't, in Yeshven Mitzvah Simonim, Chayavus with Bechorda, if it has some simonim of the parents, then it's Chayav in Bechorda. Now, the question is, my lava tarvayu. Shouldn't we assume that that last line in Yeshve Mitzvah Simonim is referring to both cases? And if it's referring to both cases, the second case we had was a donkey that gave birth to something that resembles a source. that resembles a horse, and therefore that would answer our second question. That would answer the second question in the series.
And we said it would be...
We asked, would it be Kodesh or not? This Braita seems to be saying that as long as it has Mechitzim on him, then it is. The answer is not necessarily, because a parah shayoda minchamo. Not necessarily, because the Braita, when it says im yeshve Mechitzim on him, may not be referring to both cases. It may be referring back only to the first case, where the parah gave birth to something resembling a chamor. We would say that's chayav b'chayra. But not necessarily would we say that it applies to the chamor that gave birth to a sus, which is the second case. Okay, so the question is, so why is it bothering to mention, why is it bright bothering to mention the case of a donkey gave birth to something that looks like a horse? What's the point of mentioning it? Why, in that case, why would it have to mention that it's potter? Pshita, shouldn't it be obvious? Hashta, let's consider. If a cow gave birth to something that looks like a chamer, where both of them are animals that have the concept of Grisha's Bechara, you say only if it has Mr. Simonim as a chayev, but if it doesn't have Mr. Simonim, if it's completely nidmet to the other species, potter. Well then, by Kavachayim, Chamor Shiyol, the Minsus Miboya. So how much more so if a donkey gave birth to something that looks like a Sus? So if you're going to say that the Yeshba Mr. Simonim is referring to both cases, okay, so that's the Chiddush. But if you're saying Mr. Simonim is only referring to the first case, then why bother mentioning the second case at all? It's clear that in the second case, if it doesn't have Mr. Simonim, it should be Potter. The answer is Itzrich, no, because we could argue we need the case of the donkey that gave birth to something that looks like a horse, because Sakhidat Hamina, because you could argue like this. When it comes to a cow giving birth to something that looks like a donkey, there's a big difference between them. The mother has horns. The mother being a cow has horns. The baby, which looks like a donkey, does not. And a cow has split hooves. A donkey does not have split hooves. So it has round hooves. Yeah. So therefore, so you could argue, therefore, that they look completely different. Therefore, you could say that if they look completely different, it's potter, and it has mixed simonim tzchayev. Avol hacha, but when it comes to a donkey and a horse, the idi v'idi en lakarnayim, neither one has horns. Idi v'idi parseseach slippers, both of them have joined hooves, full hooves, unsplit hooves. Ema chamer odem ba'almahu, you would say, maybe it's not even considered a nimet. Maybe, okay, so it has the color of a horse. Okay, so it's a donkey that's red or brown in color, which is the normal color of horses. But in other words, the fact that it looks like a horse is not necessarily really so much it looks like a horse. It's primarily a donkey. It has the larger physical simonim of a donkey, because like a donkey, it doesn't have horns. Like a donkey, it doesn't have split hooves. It has the coloration and whatever of a horse. Big deal. Okay, so it's a discolored donkey. That's all. So you would think maybe it's not even considered a nidmeh, kamash malan, and therefore that would be the chiddush that nevertheless we would consider it a nidmeh. But not necessarily because of the color, and I guess also the shape of the head and whatever else, yeah, whatever. But so the point is though that maybe the Braita is not addressing the case where a donkey's baby has mixed a simonim of a donkey. Where it's mostly nidmet to a horse, but it has mixed a simonim of a donkey. Maybe the Braita is not addressing that case.
The Braita addresses only the case where
the Braita is definitely addressing the case where it's completely nidmet, both cases, where the mother is a cow and the baby looks like a donkey, or where the mother is a donkey and the baby looks like a horse. If it's completely nidmeh, the Braita is telling us in both cases it's potter. But maybe when the Braita says mitzvah simonim is only referring to the first case, when it's a cow and a donkey. When it's a donkey and a horse, the Braita maybe is not addressing that. Why is it mentioning the donkey and the horse for chalal? Because otherwise you wouldn't even think that there's a concept of nidmeh between a donkey and a horse, because they look basically the same. The major difference between them is the color. No, obviously you have. No, but the major differences between them, for example, the fact that they both don't have horns and the fact that they both have split hooves are the same. They are, after all, from the same family. So that's fine, but nevertheless, you would think that's not considered enough to be a difference. I mean, you also have big donkeys and smaller donkeys.
No, it's not that
yeah.
different.
Okay, but the point still remains that you wouldn't think that the concept of nidmeh applies, as opposed to you would think, fine, between an ox and a donkey, the concept of nidmeh applies because they look very different. Because they have completely different physical characteristics, but a donkey and a horse basically have very similar physical characteristics. The major noticeable difference that you notice at first glance is the color. So you would think maybe that doesn't count in it,
yeah? That's true, Miss Kim.
Fine, okay, but that's a subtler difference. But the point is, you would think maybe if you get down to it, they have a different number of chromosomes too, you know. But you're not. We're talking about obvious gross physical characteristics. Mm-hmm. So therefore, they would think that maybe it's not considered nimba. Kamashal on that it is. So we don't have a proof from the braisa one way or the other. So what's the halacha in these three cases?
Right.
The Rambam has a general rule that he paskins like intim saloyma. Whenever the Gemara asks a question and then says intim saloyma this, then here's a second question, the Rambam paskins like that. Therefore, the Rambam learns that in the first two cases, the answer is the baby does have kedusha. Namely, the first case where the mother was a cow and the baby looked like a donkey. And the second case where the mother is a donkey and the baby looks like a horse. In both those cases, the Rambam paskins it has kedushas b'chora for sure. In the third case, where the mother is a donkey and the baby looks like a horse, the Rambam says it's a suffix. So therefore, the result, when you have a suffix, petach hamer, is when we'll learn later on in our parak, what you do is you have to designate a sheep that you, as if you were going to give it to the kohen, but you're not required to give it to the kohen, you can keep it for yourself. You designate it in order to make, and that makes the, just to designate it, because that makes the petach hamer now mutar bahana, otherwise you'd have to break its name. But you can keep it for yourself, because I'm Motzim HaChaber, all of Arai. If the Kohen wants the sheep, you would have to win. The Rosh disagrees with that. The Rosh says, we see from the discussion in the Gemara over here, we've answered the first question, where the mother is a Parah and the baby looks like a Hamor. So fine, we've answered that. It has to be just a Parah. The Rosh learns that the second and third cases are left as a topic.
When
the mother is a donkey and the baby, when the baby looks like a horse, or when the mother is a cow and the baby looks like a horse. So he says both of those are left as a suffix, and therefore the Rambam again learns only the third case is a suffix, so he would say fine, it's a suffix b'chor, which means it's a suffix b'chor behemah tahara, so you wouldn't be able to shear it and work with it, and you'd have to treat it with the b'chorah to be on the safe side, but if a person does, but because it would be a suffix.
That's the case of
a parah that gave birth to someone that looks like a fish.
On the other hand, the
Rosh learns that also the second case is a suffix, so the second case being a donkey that gave birth, a donkey and a horse, so he would say again, you have to take the sheep and designate it, but you don't have to give it to the kohen. And in the third case, yeah, it would be suffix b'chor. That's how it's pashtun in Shulchan Aruch.
The
halacha actually is pashtun in Shulchan Aruch in this case, that's the Rosh.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Okay. I don't know. I mean, in general, the Mechaber used the Rish, the Rambam, and the Rosh, and usually pashtun like the majority between them, but the Rish didn't write on these halachas, so maybe it's one against one, so maybe the Mechaber figured that the Rosh's position seems more logical. I don't know. Or maybe because an Isser Daraisa, so you have to be Machmer on it. Okay, fine. All right, then the Mishnah said, Umahin Ba'achilachola. We said in the Mishnah, what about when you have a Nidmeh, are you allowed to eat it? So we said the Mishnah gave the rule that anything that comes from a Tahar animal is Tahar, anything that comes from a Tomei animal is Tomei. So if you have a cow gives birth to a Nidmeh, then it's kosher, even if it looks like a different species. And if a donkey gives birth to a ninma, even if it looks like a kosher species, it's still also cheap.
So the rules of Bechor and Tame are just opposite, basically.
No, in the case of Bechor, we're saying if it's completely ninma, then it doesn't have to look as Bechor. If it's partially ninma, then it does, or it may or may not, depending on the situation. In the case of whether it's kosher or not, all it depends on, strictly speaking, is what species it came from.
So that's it, completely nidmeh.
So if it's completely nidmeh, if a cow gave birth to something that was completely nidmeh, it wouldn't have kedushas b'chor, but you would be allowed to eat it. But it's not complete opposites, because if a chamur gives birth to something that's nidmeh, it also doesn't have kedushas b'chor, but you're not allowed to eat it.
Right, so it's not... the opposite, but they're
orthogonal to each other. One has nothing to do with the other.
Right.
Okay, fine. Right. So the question is, the Gemara asks, why does the Mishnah have to use this expression, shehayotze min atome tome, vayotze min atoro tome? Tosfos actually points out, the question is really, shehayotze implies that we're giving a reason. Why is it that if a Torah one gives birth to a Tomei, to one that looks like a Tomei, it's mutter and so forth, because what comes out of a Tomei is Tomei? The question is, the Mishnah should have just said, Vehayose. You should know a general rule is, whatever comes out of a Tomei is Tomei. Why is the Mishnah phrasing as if it was giving a reason? Shehayose implies that's giving a reason.
Shehayose.
The answer is simona ba'amu. The Mishnah is giving us a simon. This way, when you're learning the Mishnah, you won't get mixed up on the, and you won't get mixed up and learn it wrongly. The lo tichlas lach is this way. You shouldn't confuse things. The sheh hayotze is a, because here's a way of remembering which is which. Whatever comes out of a tahor is tahor and so forth. Don't think that you should go according to the appearance of the baby animal, and in that case, the ninmeh that was born to a cow looks completely like a non-kosher animal, and the ninmeh that was born to a donkey looks completely like a kosher animal. So you would think, therefore, you should go according to that. Therefore, the Mishnah is informing us, you go according to the mother, and that helps you keep things straight. Okay. Now, if the mother is kosher, the baby is kosher. Now, where do we know this from? So like this, the Tanur Rabbanan, we learn in a Brisa, the Pasuk says like this. The Pasuk mentions that you're allowed to eat any animal that's makris paras or maligera, that chews its cud and has split hooves. Then the Pasuk says, achas zeloi soko mi maligera o mi makris paras. Then the Pasuk says, the following you may not eat among those that chew their cud and have split hooves. And then, so in context, the Pasuk is mentioning, the Pasuk is using that as an introduction to the four animals that have only one simon, the gomo, the arneves, the shopan, and the chazer. However, it doesn't have to mention that because we ourselves know that those have one simon, and in fact, the pasuk goes on to say that each of them only has one simon. So we darshan as if this was an independent clause. You may not eat this that is from the malegera, so that is among the malegera and among the makris parsa. Meaning yesh lachoshu. Meaning something else. Yesh lechoshu malegera or makris parsa. You can have a creature which has both simonim, the iyata ochle, and yet you're not allowed to eat it. The aza, and what is that case? That tahor shenolad me'atame, namely where it chews its cud and has its split hooves, but it was born to a non-kosher mother, and it's a nidbe. So that's where we learn it from. From these words, achas zeloi sochle mamalei agero makris parsa. The Torah, in other words, is not only using those words as an introduction to the four animals that have one simon, it's also an independent statement that there are certain maligera and makrisa parasa, even though they have both, that you're not allowed to eat. Namely, with this particular animal, is maligera and makrisa parasa, but it was born to a donkey or a horse or what have you. The question is, oy eina ela tome anolim natar? Maybe not. Maybe the pasuk means the other way around, that if an animal that is nidmet to a tome looks like if an animal that was born to a tahor looks like a tamei, so a cow gave birth to something that's nidme to a donkey, and you would say maybe that's the one that's also. So what would these words mean? Like this, a tamei animal, a seemingly tamei animal that doesn't chew its cud and doesn't have split hooves, that was born from a tahor animal. That's the question. We're trying to figure out how we know this. We were saying the words mimale agero or mimafise aparisa. Remember, keep in mind that the word the prefix mem can have two meanings. It can mean among and it can mean from. Mimale agero or mimafise aparisa. So we were understanding that the words mimale agero or mimafise aparisa means among the ones that are malagera and mafise aparisa, there's a certain type that are also, namely, if they were born to a tomei mother. But now we're saying maybe not. Maybe the mem means from. What comes from Malagera and Mafrise Parasa is sometimes also, namely where it looks like a tome. And Hachikama, what it means to say is like this, Dover Abomi Malagera or Mafrise Parasa Lesecho, when you have something that comes from Malagera and Mafrise Parasa, but it itself does not look like a kosher animal, Loisecho, you're not allowed to eat it. So how do we know? In other words, how do we know that the mem means among rather than from? The answer is, Talmud Lema Gomol Tomehu. The answer is the next pasuk mentions that it mentions the camel. It is tome. So the word who is a mute. Who tome the and tome. I know the natara tome. So only a regular camel, the kind that was born to a camel mother, is oser, but not an animal that resembles a camel that was born to a kosher species. That's that we learn that from the mute of who. Gomel tome. Who tome ben tome? I know them not tore tome. Ela tore. Rather, if you have an animal that looks like a gomel, so it doesn't chew its cud and it doesn't have split hooves or fully split hooves, whatever, but it was born to a kara mother, then it's okay because it is not a gomel.
So the rule is.
So that's the rule. Ayoritim and Atar.
Even if you have an animal that looks like an ontar.
Right. Reb Shimon Omer. Reb Shimon learns differently. Gomel shnei pa'amim. Reb Shimon says no. I disagree with that. And the fact that the Torah mentions twice that the gomel is not kosher, once in Parshas Shmini and again in Parshas Re'eh, when the Torah repeats the list of kosher and non-kosher animals, he says, why does it say gomel twice? Echad at echad gomel anel min agdamala. One is the regular kind of camel that was born to a camel mother. The echad gomel anel min apara. The second one teaches us that if a camel-like animal was born to a para, it is also. So he disagrees with the Tana Kama, and he disagrees with the Tana of our Mishnah that anything that comes out of a Torah is Torah. Tosfos later on, in the third parak, discusses that maybe Rav Shimon would say that rule only about a gomel. Maybe he would agree when it comes to other kinds of tummy looking animals that come from a tahor. Maybe he would agree that they're tahor. Okay, fine. But Rabbanon high gomel my help. Okay, what are the Rabbanon doing with the twice that it says Gomel? Now, at the end of the Amud, which we'll get to tomorrow, Best Hashem, the Gemara will ask, every one of the four non-kosher animals is mentioned twice. You have the four animals that have only one simon, the Gomel, the Shofar, and the Arneves, and the Chazir. All of them are mentioned in Vayikra and repeated again in Devarim. So what are we doing with the repetition of those? So at the end of the Amud, the Gemara will ask that. But meanwhile, let's deal with Rav Shimon is learning from this fact that if it's twice Gomel, that if a Gomel is born to a Para, it is in fact not kosher. And the Chalim are disagreeing with that. So the Rabbanon hai Gomel Mayatule. So what are the Rabbanon doing with the twice Gomel? The answer is Chablas or Asme, the Chablas of Chelbo, the Chalovri. They would say one teaches us that the camel itself is also. The other one teaches us that the milk of the camel is also.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Rav Shimon, what would Rav Shimon answer to that? Where would Rav Shimon know that camel's milk is also? The answer is, Nafkalemi es hagomel. He says, because the Pasuk says, es hagomel, kimalagero, etc. So es means what's coupled to it, namely the milk.
Me es.
May es, from the word es.
What's the word es.
No. The Pasuk doesn't say the word may. The Pasuk doesn't say may. The Pasuk says es hagomel. He is learning meg from the word es hagomel, the fact that the Torah says the word es hagomel. So es means dover atofel, means es atofel legomel, means something that is secondary to the camel, namely its milk. Okay, but Rabbanon would answer to that, es demloy darshi. They don't darshan the word es to teach us such things. Kivitanya, as in fact we learn in a braisa. Shimon aham suni. That was Shimon Hamsuni. How your Dorish called it? That was his name. Shimon Hamsuni. No, not the regular of Shimon. No, Shimon Hamsuni. No, he was in the times of Rabbi Akiva, as we're going to say in a minute. Hamsuni could mean he was a place from a place called Hamsun and whatever. Anyway, in other places where the Gemara quotes this, it mentions that another version is that his name was Nehemiah Hamsuni. Anyway, how your Dorish called S the S Shabbat Torah. He was going through the Torah and darshaning every S what it teaches us. And it teaches us something extra. We had it in many places. We had it in Kedushin, a few places. Kiven Shi Gil Es Hashem Lekachotira. Then he reached the pasuk Es Hashem Lekachotira. Pirush. So he stopped. He stopped giving these drashas. Obviously, you can't possibly be marba that you should have fear for anything else, for anyone or anything else comparable to Hashem. So therefore, the S is obviously not coming to include anything over here.
Before he said what?
He was going throughout the Torah. Every S. Gradations brought out came S the Shemayim, the S the Arba. And so on and so forth. He was darshaning every single S that it teaches us something. But it comes to S, Hashem like Hakira, and he has a problem. What else can you compare to the fear of Hashem? Amr lo Talmidim, Rebbe. So Talmidim says to him, Rebbe, call Esim Shabbat Tadrashta Masa Healeim. What's going to happen with all the Esim that you've darshan? In other words, are you retracting your whole system over here that you're saying that there's nothing to darshan from the Es? Amalahem, he said, yes. Kshem Shekibalti Schar al Adusha. Just as all this time I've been receiving rewards from Hashem for darshaning these words Es, Kachani Makabal Schar al Adusha. So now I'll receive rewards from Hashem for stopping. Why would he receive a reward for stopping? Marsha explains in Kiddushin, where this Gemara is also brought. He says like this: Shimon Hamsuni was in order. The reason why he was darshaning all the S's is to show the greatness of the Torah. There's not the greatness of Hashem who gave us the Torah, but there's not a single extra word in it. Even the word S, which on the face of it is just meant to make something the object of a sentence, nevertheless it still has a meaning. But now when he came to Esau, Hashem al-Kachat Tira, and there's nothing that he felt that seemed comparable to the fear of Hashem, then therefore he's going to receive reward for Prisha, because he's also doing it for the greatness of Hashem. To say that there's nothing else, that there's nothing else whose fear is comparable to Hashem. So in both cases, he's acting for the covet of Hashem.
Yeah, except
that
all the other
S's
don't have a meaning.
Fine, so now he had to say all the other S's don't have a meaning. Okay. Ad Shabar Rav Akiva Balimit, until Rav Akiva came along and taught that, no, this S also teaches us something. S Hashem Lekech Atira, Lurabit Tamid Chachamim. It comes to include Tamid Chachamim, that you should have a fear for them like you have, comparable to the fear of Hashem. So the point is, therefore, Rav Shimon in our Gemara over here holds like Rav Akiva. Rav Akiva was his Rebbe, after all. Therefore, he can dash him from S Hagomel, whereas the Chachamim hold like Shimon Hamsuni, and they don't dash him from S Hagomel. So therefore, they need a separate passage to teach us that camel's milk is ulcer, and they learn that from the fact that it says Gomel twice. Reb Shimon, who's able to learn from Esa Gomel, is able to say, fine, I can learn the milk that is also from Esa Gomel. Therefore, I have Gomel available for a drasha, and that drasha is that, in fact, that if a Gomel is born to a para, it's ulcer. Okay. Amalei Rav Acha Brei D'Rav L'Rav Ashi. However, then, Rav Acha Brei D'Rav Asher Ashi. Ella, time of the Rabbanim, the Gomel. So what are you telling me? You're telling me the Chachamim are learning that camel's milk is also that it's twice Gomel. But Rav Shimon may Esa Gomel. You're telling me Rav Shimon is learning from the fact that it says Esa Gomel. Hola, Bachi, and what are you telling me? If it weren't for that, if it didn't say Gomel twice, if it didn't say Esa Gomel, Hava Amina Chet Cholav the Behemoth Mea Shari, you would think the milk of a non-kosher animal should be Mutter. Why would it be Mutter? My Shnoma Hadatanya. Why would it be different than what we learned in a Braisa? We had this a few times in Cholin. Ha Tmeim, when it says the Tmeim among the Shrosim. Yeah, we had this in Cholin. No. Cholav, no, we didn't really know. We talked about Bosa of Cholav, obviously, but we didn't really talk about how we know that milk of non-kosher animals is also. But we say over there, Ha Tmeim, when it says Ela Ha Tmeim Lachem B'chol Asheret, that teaches us Lasik Siron, it comes to teach us that the juice that exudes out of them is also the roitzbon and the gravy, the soup, whatever that comes out of them when you cook them, the kifa shalan and the kifa, which is the little shreds of meat and spices and whatever that are cooked with them and fall to the bottom of the pot. So we know of it. So and milk shouldn't be any less than that. So automatically milk from a non-kosher animal is non-kosher. Why do we need a special jirasha for it? The answer is Ixtra. Still, we need this jirasha. Rav Shimon's from Esa Gomel, the Chachamim from Gomel, because Sakadai Dechamina, otherwise you would think like this. Hoyol de Behemoth Tahora Nami Chidushu. When you get down to it, the very fact that you're allowed to drink milk even from Behemoth Tahora is a bit of a chidush. And in fact, later on, the Gemara is going to take up the question, how do we know that you're allowed to drink milk? And why is that? Because we learn in a Braisa in Nida, Dam Nekav Nasacholov, the blood, the context over there is about a nida. Why is it that women, when they're nursing, or why is it when women are lactating, they don't generally have a period? And in fact, that's relevant in halacha. They have a chazaka, they're miselekes midamim, that they have a chazaka that they're not going to bleed during that time. Why not? Because the blood, Nekav, is chemically changed, Nasacholov, and becomes milk. Biologically also, you have the milk comes from substances that are transported around in the bloodstream. Anyway, the point is, that is how it is medically. Yeah, the milk and pretty much anything that comes out.
The reason why the...
Fine, okay, the point is, still, that's one way the Gemara understands it, is that the blood transforms into milk. So therefore, you would think you shouldn't be able to drink milk because it's essentially blood in a different form. And we know you're not allowed to eat blood, but to eat blood. But given the chidush, so given now that there is a chidush, that you're allowed to drink milk from kosher animals, you would think the behemoth may and nami lishtiri, you would think by the same logic, you ought to be able to drink milk from non-kosher animals as well. Once it's mutter, it should be mutter across the board.
If you drink it from kosher
animals? If you're allowed to drink it from a kosher animal, even though it came from blood, you would think maybe you should be allowed to drink it from non-kosher animals as well. Kamash Malan, and that is why. We need a drasha to tell us that you can't. So the question is, now, in Nida over there, there are two explanations that the Chachamim give why it is that women, when they're lactating, generally don't have periods. One is this dam nek of an asacholov. So dam nek of an asacholov. So this works out well according to that opinion. That's why we need a Jerusha to tell us that milk of non-kosher animals is also. But then there's a different opinion over there. The reason why women, when they're lactating, don't have periods, a verea misparkene mena, because the birth itself is not even lactating. The birth itself causes like her limbs come apart. The ein nafsha chazera. A verea misparkene literally means like her limbs come apart. They sort of not really break apart, but whatever. Yeah, there's a tremendous stress on the body. Therefore, the ein nafsha chazera chala. Therefore, her blood doesn't fully return to her ad esrim rabba chodesh until 24 months to pass. So according to that opinion, there's no particular chiddush that you're allowed to drink milk, because according to that opinion, milk and blood have nothing to do with each other. So according to that, then, it's an obvious thing that milk from non-kosher animals should be also. Why would we need a pasuk to tell us so? The answer is still, itzrich, still, you need a pasuk, sock that chamina, because otherwise you would think like this. Normally, you don't have anything that comes from a living creature, which the Torah asks. We know that Avim and Achai and Bosom and Achai are also, as we learned in Chulin. Milk is, in a certain sense, like Avim and Achai. Now, it's not a true Avim and Achai. It doesn't have Bosom and Gidim Batsomas, but nevertheless, it still comes from Achai. Actually, the Noda B'Yehuda actually has a chiddush. He says the point is not so much that it would be like Eidim and Achai, but the point is that a live animal has an Isser on it, because you're not allowed to eat an animal that's not shechted, and it wasn't shechted, so therefore, on the face of it, the milk should be Isser. And V'hai Cholok Eidim and Achai was Shori, and yet it's Mitzer. So again, there is a certain chiddush in it, even if we say it doesn't come from blood. So again, you would think even milk from a non-kosher animal ought to be Mitzer. Kamash Mulan, and that is why we need the limud from Esha Gomel, or from Gomel, to tell us that it's not. We could have thought, once you have that, normally anything that comes from a living kosher animal is Osir. And here the Torah is allowing you to drink milk from the kosher animal. So you would think once it's being matur across the board, and you'd be allowed even from a non-kosher animal. Therefore, you know, the limud to tell us that no.
By gomel
or epagomel, as the case may be. Okay. So now, we'll stop over here, but we'll take up tomorrow then the question, how taka do we know that we're allowed to drink milk? Where is there something in the Torah that tells us that we're allowed to drink milk? That's nursing from a mother. That's different. We're talking about animal milk. No, obviously a baby is allowed to nurse from its mother. Even human milk is not even awesome. You're allowed to drink human milk. You're just not allowed to drink it directly from the breast once you're weaned. But you're allowed to drink human milk. Because human beings are not considered a non-kosher species. But human beings, the only isser, according to the Rambam anyway, the only isser on eating human flesh is only an isser effort. That's not enough to make milk also. But
if you say it comes from blood and we're not allowed to eat blood.
Again, you have two different opinions over here. But human blood also wouldn't necessarily be also Jaraisa for the same reason. Because people are not animals. The apostle mentions, you know, to eat blood of animals, it's not. Anyway, the question is, how do we know we're allowed to drink animals? That's midrabban, man. I wouldn't say so much midrabban. It's also there's an issu esta on it from the Torah to eat the according to the Rambam, eating human flesh and the pastors, I guess, also drinking human blood would be also as an issu esta, but it's not a lav like there is with non-kosher animals or like there is with the blood of kosher animals. Anyway, the point is we're not talking human milk over here. We're talking about animal milk. How do we know you're allowed to buy a carton of milk in the store and drink it? That's what the Gemara will take up.